Some sort of a vill three, no, four islands over. I see a big wall and smoke.
Extracting a device from his munitions bag, JB extended the antique Navy telescope to its full length. The device compacted to smaller than a soup can, but had much better range than even the best pre-dark binocs.
Yeah, it's a vill, all right. Big one, too, with one hell of a good wall.
Cold Harbor?
Nope, someplace new.
Good. Any place is better than there.
Leaning against the railing to support himself, Ryan took a turn at the telescope.
These nearby islands are only 100 or so yards away from each other. Be an easy swim.
Except for the crabs.
Christie paused, and they could hear the endless scraping from below.
Let's go inside. Get away from those things.
Trundling inside the framed structure on top of the granite tower, the companions found it stifling hot behind the glass walls. But as the heavy glass door closed, the sounds of the fighting crabs and crashing waves completely vanished. Silence reigned supreme.
Perhaps it would be wise to leave the door open. We shall be needing cross-ventilation from the chimney to breathe downstairs.
Right.
Dean nodded and propped the door ajar with a pile of the rope. The central area of the beacon room was small, the huge lens assembly taking up most of the space. The walls were thick glass with massive support columns every few feet. The floor was only 3 feet wide and circled the beacon until reaching a steep set of wrought iron stairs with no railing. Support was offered by grabbing hold of the steel column the stairs wound around. Ryan looked at his son.
Any problems downstairs?
The place is empty.
Dean scrunched one side of his face.
Except for the dead guy.
What if the crabs get inside through the chimney flue?
I closed it. No way they're getting through plate steel.
Good. Smart move.
Jack started loosening his collar.
Mighty hot.
A bead of sweat trickled down Mildred's cheek.
Greenhouse effect. Sunlight comes in and the heat gets trapped.
Like a magnifying glass?
Sort of, yes.
Screwing the cap back on his canteen, Ryan wiped his mouth on his sleeve. He knew that explanation wasn't quite right, but let it pass. Taking a sip from his canteen, Doc wandered closer to the huge prism and lens assembly that dominated the middle of the room. The intricately carved glass lens stood 6 feet high, with concentric circles cut in short arcs on the thick glass, the reflective prisms spaced evenly around a central bullseye-style magnifying glass. Behind the lens was some sort of a mechanism with a silvery reflecting dish.
A first-order Fresnel lens.
Doc was impressed.
This must have been some very bad water. These are extremely powerful.
Yeah? How far?
20 miles, or so I've been told. And since the horizon is only 7 miles away, that gives it quite a decent range.
Jack scowled at the information. After night fell, they could see far, but the beam itself would broadcast their presence to the world. No good. He had no wish to face another of the Baron's PT boats until they had more blasters. Maybe even some of those Firebird rockets, too. Mildred looked curiously at Doc, rubbing her neck with a damp cloth.
Fresnel?
Leaning on his ebony sword stick, Doc pursed his lips.
A Frenchman, I believe. I have a cousin who retired from the Navy and became a lighthouse keeper. He used to regale my dear Emily and me at every opportunity with stories about the new types of lenses and such. Poor man was always afraid the Confederate Army would smash his beacon to make Union Army supply ships crash on the shore. Odd fellow.
His smile fading, Doc blinked several times.
Why, even after the Civil War was over, is the war over? Only last week we heard about Lee crossing the Potomac. Or was it last month?
As he wandered off, the others paid the man no attention. Doc often slipped into the past, but always returned if there was trouble. Privately, Mildred envied the man slightly. At least for a few brief minutes, he was back among his family and friends, a land without radiation or muties. As time passed, she found it ever harder to recall her life before awakening in the cryo unit and joining Ryan. Sometimes she even imagined that this had always been her life, and the past was but a dream from childhood. On impulse, she reached out and took JB by the hand. giving it a gentle squeeze. The man turned and smiled at her, maintaining the intimate contact.
Something wrong, Millie?
Only he called her that. She had always been Mildred to her family and associates. The past had many pleasures: clean sheets, pizza, air conditioning, cable TV. But there had never been a man in her life like John. He was worth the violence and horrors of the Deathlands. To be with him was worth any price.
Not a thing, John. Just thinking.
Giving her a hug, J.B. released her hand and continued his examination of the huge lens.
What's the light source for the beacon?
Electric, which means generators and juice in the basement.
Ryan agreed. The generator was old, but still serviceable.
Emergency, Jenny, if nothing else. If the Baron's Sekhmet haven't located the gateway, we might find enough juice here to operate the generators and still leave these islands. Dean, show us the way.
Yes, sir.
The boy darted down the steep stairs with the immortal assurance of youth. Taking Doc by the elbow, Christy guided the mumbling old man down the stairs along with the others. The wealth of light reflecting off the lenses and prisms of the beacon cast bizarre shadows down the circular staircase, and the companions had to light candles before even reaching halfway down. Dean played the beam of the flashlight over a bare section of the stairs.
This is the spot. The rope was tied here, and he was hanging over there.
Jack frowned.
Suicide. Easier throw somebody off top. Let grav chill.
Ryan looked down and could see nothing below.
Better check the corpse.
Ryan drew his blaster. He could get a lot of info from the corpse, suicide or not. The yellowish cone of the flashlight bobbing about, the companions proceeded carefully down the angled steps and spread out when they reached the bottom level of the tower. Mildred took the flashlight from Dean and pumped the charging handle several times, but the beam stayed as dim as before. The battery was dying again. Turning it off, she pocketed the device to save for medical emergencies. Now, in the flickering light of the candles, the companions did a quick wreck of the tower. This area was twice as wide as the beacon room, and it was much cooler, probably because they were now 20 feet under the sand. There were several large wooden lockers full of tackle and assorted equipment for rescuing drowning people and maintaining the beacon. A heavy-gauge power switch was set on the granite block wall between a couple of windows, each showing only a smooth expanse of compacted sand against the other side of the glass. A tangle of bones and cloth stood in the middle of the floor. Ryan and Mildred knelt alongside the mess to pull out a human skeleton. There was a terrible crack yawning wide in the skull, but the breakage was fresh, obviously caused by the fall and not from a blow to the temple while the man was alive. Dean set the candle on a wall shelf.
I found him hanging halfway down the circular stairs. The rope was in fine shape, so I cut him loose and took it.
As Ryan started to go through the pockets of the ragged clothing, Mildred lifted the skull and turned it, opening the jaw as wide as it could reach.
Well, he's definitely from the pre-dark days. Look at those ceramic fillings. That's prime dentistry.
How dire?
Tell you in a minute.
Carefully, she laid out the bones, placing them in order. Then she ran her trained hands over the skeleton, checking for damage, and found nothing. Finally, she rocked back on her heels.
Looks like he died of strangulation. Damn fool must have tied the noose wrong and it didn't snap his neck when he jumped off the stairs. Poor bastard just hung there until his air ran out. Might have been a couple of minutes or a whole day if he was particularly strong.
A terrible way to die.
There's no good way to get aced. Some are just worse than others.
For some reason, that statement made Mildred feel incredibly sad. Maybe it was because, while they often found dead folks, few were from pre-dark. It made her feel a sort of kinship with the nameless man. She made the sign of the cross.
Ashes to ashes, dust to dust, and may God have mercy on your soul.
So, right.
Holding a small leather journal in his hand, Ryan stood and tried to force open the lock, but the ancient mechanism was strong. He stopped when the leather cover started to give instead of the lock. He'd have to open this later or risk tearing it apart. He tucked the journal into a shirt pocket.
Okay, let's finish our sweep.
A big door studded with heavy bolts seemed to lead outside, judging from the trickles of sand that rained down along the jamb every time they touched the handle. A second door led to a hallway that opened directly to the cottage, and the third was locked tight.
This should be the basement. Maybe a storage area, or even a bomb shelter if we're lucky.